Welcome to New Reality. This is Alan Sternfeld. This program is about a transformation of consciousness, we can call it, a way to look at the world that's different than what we've been used to looking at, and how we are changing our points of view about the nature of reality. And that's why I really am excited about tonight's guest, George Hansen. He is a parapsychologist. He's the author of The Trickster and the Paranormal. Welcome, George. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Alan.
I am fascinated about this place called Liminal, the Liminal place, this place of transition, this place between the world, in a sense. You know, everyone has divided the world into a duality, night and day, black and white, male, female, up and down. And what I get from your material is that there's this other place that, in a sense, can't be put into a box. Is that a right interpretation of that?
Well, that's right as far as it goes. It's a rather difficult concept for many people to get. I came through it from anthropology, and particularly the work of two scholars, Arnold van Gennep, who is a French anthropologist and folklorist. He published a book in the early 1900s called The Rites of Passage. That book is still in print today. It was translated into English in 1960, and the ideas were picked up by British anthropologist Victor Turner. The idea is developed from rites of passage and from ritual. And in many societies and earlier societies, there were rituals that accompanied changes in one's social position, for instance, from child to adult. Today we have a very long period of many years of that transition. In other societies, that transition was made much more quickly and abruptly. But there was a transition period, and that was a liminal period. It was surrounded by ritual. Similarly, at death, virtually all cultures have funerals, and that is a ritual to mark that transition period. But what other societies realized is these transition periods extend over a period of time. This is where the transformation, that transition takes place. And during that time, ordinary social life is upended. People are not restricted to their normal social roles. Sometimes the regular workaday rules are suspended and the like. And it becomes a very, very different kind of time, especially in earlier what we call primitive societies. They recognize that time as holy, as sacred, but also as a bit dangerous. And it's during that time that supernatural powers were more likely to manifest. So there is a very deep connection between that transition period and the supernatural or paranormal phenomena.
So the paranormal, I mean, because what you're describing, I mean, from ancient primitive cultures, yes, they had this time of ritual to mark the sacred passage, because then, in a way, life meant something. If we don't do a ritual around the passage, even a marriage, it seems like it has less meaning. And, of course, like the honeymoon is that magical period where you maintain a kind of altered consciousness, and that's sort of where what you're suggesting. But I also want to put out there, it seems like as a culture, as a planet, we are living in a liminal period of transition. Would you say that?
Well, I'm not sure we are. I think every generation believes it's on the edge of momentous change. And we really only know that in hindsight. Certainly the 60s were a period of really big change in our Western culture, with the drug revolution, the anti-war protest, space exploration, the sexual revolution, the hippies. All that is, in retrospect, looked upon as a time of really major change. what's interesting is the period from about 1964 to 1968 was a period of what was known as, or called, a pandemic UFO wave. There was also a surge of interest in the paranormal in our culture and in meditation and Eastern religions. So there are these periods, but we often don't know for sure whether we're in a transition state until some years have passed.
Well, there was, like you mentioned, the drug revolution, but not just drugs, psychedelics seemed to open up the mind to those different perceptions, and I think some of that different perception took hold in the culture and stayed with us.
I absolutely agree with you. A greater openness to drug exploration and alterations of consciousness, whether it be drugs or meditation, chanting, and the like. Yes, indeed. That did indeed change the way many people thought.
Because, I mean, you talk about, I mean, primitive society, I've read some Levi Strauss and The Cooked in the Raw, and he makes, I mean, brilliant anthropological studies, and, you know, primitive cultures had definite boundaries and ideas and possibilities, but we're like in a free fall now. We're everything is being consumed by the internet and by there are no secrets. There, in a way, there's nothing sacred anymore. Everything is just hanging out in the open, and that's a very different type of structural society than what's gone before.
Well, you may be right, and I'm not sure. Certainly, when newspapers got big and the mail service and postal service was really effective, even 100 years ago, people thought they were on at a point of really big change. And certainly, the change today does not compare to, say, World War II. That was really a dramatic change. So, yes, we are undergoing change, but we always are. And perhaps today we are undergoing more, but I'm not yet really fully convinced of that.
But you did say make a very interesting point, and I do want to get into the UFO field because it's something I studied. You said during that period, which was obviously a huge shift from, you know, if you look at the early 60s to late 60s and those 4 years in particular from 64 to 68, you had... went from short hair to long hair, and the dress has changed, the way people wear everything changed in a sense. Music changed, art changed, states of consciousness changed in a sense within those 4 years.
I agree.
So is it maybe the time or the season of change that brings on liminal states, as if we're moving through a passageway within the cosmos that is affecting us with maybe cosmic radiation that's affecting our perception, or is it more human constructed?
Well, I think it's more based in the human condition than there might be something astronomical or astrological involved, but basically I think it's primarily our social situations, our social structures, our organizations, certainly in the 60s, changed a lot. And today we are seeing some shift, and I agree that it could be portending a major shift, and I know a lot of people are very concerned about that. The status of American banking system and our monetary value, the value of our money, is being challenged. These are really major factors in how we're going to live our life in years to come. But I don't really know yet how to assess that at this point.
I agree. We can only know in hindsight. When you're in it, you don't know. But what about the UFO? Are you saying that UFOs were just seen more often in that period because we were in that state, and that maybe they're here all the time or not here at all? What are you saying about the UFO phenomena?
Well, I think the UFO phenomena is a type of paranormal phenomena, and those phenomena tend to manifest in periods of change, transition, and upset and instability. And that was clearly a period of that kind. In people who experience UFOs, tend to be undergoing some kind of transition, or if they have a powerful UFO experience, that may kind of provoke or some kind of transition in their lives. It may accompany it. Now, I'm not sure which causes which. It may not be causal. It may just be relation, a correlation or a relation between the two. But likewise, to give another example, poltergeist phenomena. Poltergeist phenomena seem to frequently occur in among people undergoing puberty. It's that change, that transition again, that is key. Also, apparitional experiences, especially of the dead, tend to cluster around times of death of the person. Other people see apparitions of them. So these transition points in people's lives tend to foster these phenomena and interest in these phenomena. Another example would be the fall of the Berlin Wall and the collapse of communism in Eastern Europe. In the following years, there was a surge of interest in paranormal and supernatural phenomena all over Eastern Europe. So, again, we see a case where this transition, this change, was accompanied by an upsurge of interest in manifestations of the paranormal.
Well, let's track history for a second here. Okay, we had maybe the 50s that was looking, from my perspective, I think, generation beyond, but kind of stable, but in a place of transition as well. And of course, the 60s was a huge explosion, and the 70s seemed like some change. The 80s and going into the 90s and the beginning of the internet and another wave of what Terrence McKenna would call novelty. Have we ever returned to a place that's not liminal? Can you map it out how you see it?
Well, liminality is a relative term, and liminal is relative. It has to be compared to, you know, before and after. That's built into the nature of its definition. So, yes, we are, culture and people are always undergoing change. Sometimes it's more abrupt and more extreme than others. Right now, I can't say that it's all that extreme. If I look back to the 90s, is it much different? Not a huge amount of difference compared to, say, the 50s to 60s. That was a big change.
I see. And within this cultural change, what it seems like also you're saying, at least in the paranormal perspective, is a shift in consciousness. I mean, perception is altered.
Yes. The way we think, the way we live our lives, our social organizations, the way we work, all those can shift.
And they do, especially, well, even going back to the primitive cultures, they shift at those moments where there's a change in a ritual and just the perspective on the universe or their world is not what it was before that. But it's seems again like we are going through an ongoing phase change. I don't know where it has stabilized in the last, 30, 40 years. I mean, do you see it stabilizing anywhere?
Well, I think it's relatively stable. I don't think the amount of change today is that much different than 5 years ago or 10 years ago. The internet is slowly gaining more users, and there's more content on there, but it's sort of linear. There's no abrupt shift. So I'm not sure this kind of discussion will lead to an illumination of the paranormal. But if we look at more local or individual change, where we see people who have, say, near-death experiences, which usually is a big, has a substantial impact on their consciousness, people sometimes who have these experiences take a completely different orientation to the world. And the workaday world is not as important as personal relationships and their purpose in life. They may not be as concerned about making a huge amount of money. And often it's been reported that people who've had strong, powerful near-death experiences are more likely to dissolve their marriages. That is a risk. But that is a shift in consciousness and a shift in relationships.
So they're moving, they were in a liminal state. I guess you're saying part of the liminal state or the rituals that are being done means when the person returns, they function in a different way. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Say you move from child, in earlier societies, move from child to adult. You were given more privileges and more responsibilities. A person, after the ritual processes and the rites of passage are done, that person is now an adult. They may be permitted to marry and assume the roles of an adult. So yes, in earlier cultures, that liminal period preceded that complete shift in state of their existence and how they live their lives.
Well, can you talk about the people who live in those places, like the shaman, the mystic, the alchemist?
Great example. The liminal state, this transition state in this liminal realm, it has always been seen as a bit dangerous and a bit different than the rest of the world. And there have been ways of taking care of that. For instance, shamans often lived a bit apart from the rest of the tribe. It wouldn't be a long ways away, but their dwelling place might be 50 or 100 feet outside the normal area of the tribes. In religious circles, you have priests, but in Catholicism, you have monasteries and convents. Some of those convents and monasteries are cloistered. Ordinary people rarely go in there, and the people in the monks and nuns may not leave. In some orders they do, but not in all. So, and it is within those orders, in the monasteries and convents, where they engage in extended periods of meditation and contemplation. And I've talked to a number of monks and nuns, and yes, there is more of an interest and openness to paranormal phenomena. They do seem to have some understanding of that. But that is rarely taught or discussed in ordinary catechism classes and religious instruction. That's kept separate. And there is something separate and sacred about those phenomena, and it's been recognized for a very long time. Mystics also, there's always, of course, the accounts of the hermits that retreated to the desert. Mystics generally don't engage in regular 9-to-5 occupations. They're set aside. They may live in poverty or apart from the rest of society, and that's how it's typically been.
So
these people are different.
I have a question pertains to me in particular. Are you saying that this chasing of the paranormal by what's called, let's say, the New Age or the New Consciousness, which includes UFOs and ghosts and spirits and angels and all those things that seem to be sprouting up out of what's been called like the human potential, will always remain elusive to the everyday world? I mean, the hope that people that I work with and, you know, what you do is that there's a merging of those phenomena with what we call everyday reality. We hope everyone catches on. This will become mainstream. But are you saying that it will never or unlikely become mainstream because it always exists in this other realm?
Well, it's always been marginal, except in short periods. Certainly in the late 60s and early 70s, there was a huge amount of mainstream interest in these phenomena. There were network TV shows, magazines, lots of books, high-profile people becoming involved. That did not last for very long. You can go back 2,000 years ago and see many of the cultural elites denouncing this superstitious belief in some of these phenomena. You can go back hundreds of years and see antagonism by major scientists to claims. Other scientists were more receptive. But by and large, the trend is against mainstream acceptance and use of these abilities. And that's almost certainly how it is going to continue. We have thousands of years of experience if you look at this. And it is, I think, simply wishing that it would be different, but that does not do well by the historical record. So, no, I think the New Agers who hope for a complete shift in consciousness and use of all these psychic abilities are simply wrong.
Yeah, no, I get that's what you're saying, and it could explain why. You know, people keep wanting the UFOs to land on the White House lawn, and it's not happening. You know, the UFO phenomenon's been elusive since the 1940s, but probably going back 100 years or more, and they come and they go, and no one's been able to pin it down and say, look, this is it. But yet, you listen to some of the people who've done the investigation. I saw you on a panel with Richard Dolenz, and he says the government knows this. It is a reality. They ridicule people to make it look like it's kind of a fantasy. But yet, they're covering up the very secrets that could change our minds.
That's Richard Dolenz's position. I agree, but I think he is completely wrong. I don't see any good evidence that the government knows much more than we do. And I know quite a number of people in government who have been involved in the UFO topic. I am rather unimpressed with their intellectual capability almost universally. I don't think they're very bright people. I think they are as nutty as anyone on the outside. And I have no reason to think that the government knows much more than the ordinary person involved in the UFO topic. And I really don't think the government, by and large, cares at all about it.
Did you read Richard's book, UFOs and the National Security
Threat? Oh, yes, I've got it. No, Richard is a very bright guy, but I think his conclusions are wrong.
Well, doesn't he dig up evidence that is in the public domain that he says, look, the government's saying, look, this exists? Didn't you say that there?
Well, I think there are certain people in the government who will say that exists, but the government is a very large bureaucracy. There are lots of competing factions, and I think the predominant faction is we don't care about UFOs, and they probably don't exist, and if they do, they're not of much interest. And that seems to be the standard line for most people and most people in the governmental bureaucracy.
Well, it's probably the standard line for most people in the world. Like, you know, it's not going to change their lives in the sense that there's UFOs. They're doing their 9-to-5 job, they're paying the bills, you know, they're raising the kids, whatever. It's sort of the same sentiment of most people. Because they live in that other state. They live in that pretty normal state, and that's where they want to stay. Something comes along, they shake up their world, and most people don't want to know it. Would you say that?
Well, that's right. And I don't see any evidence that the government has any sizable program to study UFOs. All the evidence I've seen is that they give it a quick look at every once in a while, and then they forget about it.
You're not saying they don't exist. You're saying, you can tell me if you're right or wrong, if I'm right, is that they exist in a kind of altered state, in a kind of doorway into an unknown that's not part of this reality. Are you saying that?
Well, I wouldn't use quite those words. I do believe that they do manifest in some kind of physical form. They are transient. They are ambiguous. And they are very difficult to describe in what we call rationalistic, materialistic terms. I think their nature does inherently have some type of ambiguity associated with them. I think that's their nature.
I mean, I think for the discussion, though, and for your research, it's bigger than whether something exists or not, and I think it has to do with a state of consciousness and awareness and possibility, and how, well, you bring up the trickster. So let's talk about how the trickster kind of fits into all this. I mean, in a sense, the government could be acting as a trickster, but I think you mean something else when you say the trickster and the paranormal. Can you explain that?
Okay, that's another big topic. But the trickster, I view as an archetype, and I use that word archetype in a particular way. What I am saying when I refer to the trickster is a cluster of characteristics that tend to occur in individuals or small groups or even entire cultures. And those characteristics involve disruption, disorder, marginality, a violation of sexual taboos, and deception. So when those things start to occur within, and paranormal phenomena, when all those things, when a few of those things start to occur within a group or an individual, one needs to be aware that this trickster constellation or this trickster cluster of characteristics is going to start to grow. So when you have disruption or deception, if the government is lying to us about Vietnam, if the government is unstable with the resignation of Nixon.
Well, it's unstable now. They just shut the government down.
No, it's quite stable. No one's resigning. No one's walking off. They shut it down for a short period and it got right back on its feet. It's not really terribly unstable. It's not changing very fast. There are, of course, battles. There are always political battles. I think Obama is basically honest. I don't think he's lying about anything. Whereas back in the 70s, there was the sexual revolution was still going on. Now, there's clearly change going on today. But in an individual, if you see someone like Uri Geller, Uri Geller has paranormal powers. He's quite ambiguous. He has admitted that he has used magic tricks in the past. He was a guest of honor at a very large magic convention a couple years ago. He is very ambiguous. He moves between cultures. He is extremely charming and very friendly. I like him as a person. And I suspect he manifests a number of characteristics of the trickster.
Well, so, I saw him pick up a spoon off a table and just touch it, and that spoon bent completely. I mean, you know, he's just holding one end, not moving, and it's bending like, you know, it's butter.
Yes.
I don't know how he does it.
I don't either, but I do know professional magicians who have said that they believe what he does part of the time is real. Is really paranormal. Other magicians say quite the opposite. So here we have a great deal of ambiguity, of instability in our perceptions. This is what we would expect around these phenomena.
So what can we do with the understanding of the trickster? How does that help us, and how does that help us adapt to
One of the characteristics, tricksters do not fit into large hierarchical social structures very well. And it's tricksters are liminal characters. People who want to use this phenomenon should realize they are going to be somewhat marginal. They are not going to be employed by large hierarchical organizations using those skills. They might work as nurses or police officers or whatever, but they're not going to be paid for using their psychic abilities. Not for very long, anyway. So one needs to recognize that the people who are engaged in this and in the study of this will not be mainstream. They, if they want
well,
to work
Geller,
out...
Well, Geller, I think, got paid a lot for his psychic ability.
Well, he is paid a lot, but he is not part of a corporation. He is not an employee of a big corporation. He works as an independent contractor or operator. That's how psychics typically work. Police departments may use psychics, but they sure don't put them on their payroll. That needs to be understood.
So what can we do with the tricks? I mean, what can we learn from the trickster and bring that back to help us.
Okay, well, when you start studying paranormal phenomena, you should be aware that as you become more prominent, you are going to be likely a target of hoaxers. And if you are particularly prominent, especially if you have MD after your name or PhD, there will be hoaxers who would like to fool you, and they will have a great time at it trying. So you need to be those people who publicly identify as researchers in the field who want high prominence need to be aware that they are vulnerable to hoaxing. And we have well over 100 years of data showing this. So when skeptics start complaining about the gullibility of researchers, researchers really should start listening very carefully to what the skeptics have to say.
Why do you think it brings out hoaxing? If someone has a paranormal ability, what does that provoke within the human nature to start to inability to accept these phenomena?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you very well.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm saying, what is it in the human system, personality, that makes this whole thing come out? Is it people's inability to accept these far as I guess? Did you hear that?
I'm still not hearing you.
Oh, how about that? Do you hear me now?
Okay.
Is that better?
That's a little better.
Why do hoaxes manifest?
Why is not a good question. What, how, when, who, and where are good questions. The why question presupposes some type of explanatory framework and underlying set of assumptions. So what we can say is, historically, with hundreds of years of experience, that hoaxers and trickery accompany these phenomena frequently, especially high-profile phenomena, phenomena and reports that get a lot of public attention. Now, I have many friends who are psychics and mediums, and the vast majority are quite honest people. But the cases that get high public attention, one must be very, very cautious of, because those are the reports and the accounts that are much more likely to be due to hoaxes and trickery.
I see. So, in a sense, the hoaxers are the flip side of the paranormal.
Well, they're part of the paranormal phenomena. The paranormal phenomena are frequent, especially prominent, publicly reported paranormal phenomena are frequently reported with hoaxers and hoaxing. Those things go together.
Interesting. But you have seen paranormal activity. You are, let's say, a believer, even though you're a skeptic, you're a healthy skeptic, and you acknowledge when things seem to be paranormal or psi or whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
I mean,
yes, I've had
that's a reality to you.
Yeah, I have had paranormal experiences in my personal life as well as in my professional life doing laboratory-based research. So I am convinced that these phenomena do occur. I am not a skeptic. I have seen lots of evidence that these phenomena do occur.
But what you're saying in general is these phenomena will always be paranormal. They'll never be normal.
That would be my guess, unless we change our definitions. But, yes, they are of a different order, and they have been recognized as such for a very long time. Earlier cultures used rituals to channel, influence, and guide supernatural forces. And earlier cultures understood that's a different area than what our normal rational materialistic world is. So, yes, I think these phenomena are different. They require a different way of thinking and understanding than our usual ways.
But my suggestion at the beginning of the show is perhaps our culture is opening up to those kinds of ways more, at least that's the hope of a certain subculture that could be more mainstream than it is.
Well, I think that would probably be a bad thing.
It would be a bad thing? Why?
Because those things are unstable, and for large hierarchical culture organizations to exist, there have to be rules and guidelines. There have to be laws and routine. If the culture is in a state of chaos and flux, that is very uncomfortable for most people, and you need people to deliver the mail, to work on the sewer system, to deliver goods and services, to drive the trucks. Those have to be sort of routinized. They have to be done over and over, day in and day out. Those are not the kinds of things that psychic abilities are going to play much role in. If those are disrupted, then you might see an upsurge of interest in supernatural or paranormal reports. But by and large, we want a certain amount of routine in our lives. These phenomena tend to flourish when there is an upset of the regular workaday, ordinary world.
Oh, I get what you're trying to say or saying about this. So you're saying the structure of the society needs to be stable to create a foundation for human experience, and this paranormal activity tends to destabilize institutional structures.
Exactly. And institutional structures are typically hostile to this phenomenon. The Catechism of the Catholic Church, for instance, prohibits the practice of clairvoyance. The skeptics...
Even though they do believe in exorcism, though, right?
And they do believe that clairvoyance exists. They don't dispute that. They just prohibit the practice of it.
Because that would disrupt their institution, huh?
Well, it would disrupt not just the institution, but ordinary lives. Saints certainly had clairvoyant powers. A number of saints had clairvoyant powers. And the church acknowledges that. But they strongly discourage use of those. One should not pursue those abilities. That might happen.
You also bring... Yeah, sorry, go ahead. What did you say last thing? I missed that, sorry.
The church certainly acknowledged the existence of clairvoyance and acknowledges that some saints were able to display clairvoyant powers, but it strongly discourages anyone from pursuing the use of them. They might occur spontaneously, but that is about as far as it goes, as far as the church. Now, PSYCOP, or CSI, that's the skeptics group, instead of declaring clairvoyance a sin, just ridicules anyone who would practice such a thing or attempt such a thing, and ridicules any accounts.
Is that because there's no room in their belief system for such a possibility? I mean, why do we have those people? I know I asked why, but, I mean, is it just because they are so stuck in a materialistic paradigm that they can't accept something?
Well, I don't think it has to do anything with their conscious assessment of the data or their belief system. I think they are a type of person who likes structure and order and nice, neat boxes, and anything that tends to upset that, they would prefer to dismiss. That's just how they operate. All we can say is that there are certain types of people who are rather strongly opposed, and often these people have achieved fairly high status in society, are well supported by the system as it stands, and they are not marginal. They are the center. They are close to the top. They have significant influence. The people who are marginal tend to have much more openness to these phenomena. Minority groups, for instance.
Doesn't the culture always need those marginal people like the artists and the visionaries and the theoretical scientists to move culture? Because if culture or societies don't keep moving, they tend to get stuck and break down.
I absolutely agree with you. Those people are absolutely essential to defining society and to change it. Absolutely. I am very much in sympathy with those people. But those people have to recognize that there are also countervailing forces. Too much innovation,
right.
Too much change is inimical to the well-being of society. If you're changing... If there's too much change...
is the same thing, yes.
That's not good.
So, no, it's interesting, because too much change and too much normal activity are both deteriorate the society.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. There is an essential tension between the two, and that's required.
That tension is the kind of balance of a healthy culture, in a sense.
Yes, yes.
I get it. Now, you mentioned in your introduction about, the SRI, the Psychic Remote Viewing Project. You don't actually mention the name, but I know that Ingo Swann, who was very much a part of that, had a huge interest in sightings of the Virgin Mary or interaction. I was just talking about that tonight with some friends. What you say, why did Ingo Swann basically, what's the connection between that? What are you saying in that?
Okay, that's a very good point. I knew Ingo personally. I visited him a number of times, and Ingo had a wide area of interest in many aspects of the paranormal. The apparitions of the Virgin Mary are liminal events. They are sort of the divine emerging into our world. That is a liminal time, a liminal phenomenon. Likewise, the remote viewing is also liminal. It's the psychic ability. We typically think that we use our five senses, and with remote viewing, one can go forward in time. One is not separate. There is little or no separation when one is remote viewing. One can remote view something 1,000 miles away. So it's not bound by the typical limitations. The full explanation of the liminal aspect of this is a little bit difficult to convey. I go into that more in my book. But it is a paranormal phenomenon that challenges the typical expectations. We know from our physical world. But trying to talk about liminality and these various different aspects of it is very, very difficult, and it's almost incoherent. And the listener should be aware that the way we've been jumping around is it's going to be very, very difficult for them without any kind of setup, format, or explanatory structure, and that takes a long time. There are better ways of addressing liminality in a short period of time, but we have been jumping around, so listeners, I feel for you. This is getting rather convoluted and very difficult to follow.
Okay, I don't mean to be jumping around. I think if... we keep pointing to examples, okay, UFOs, the Virgin Mary, ghosts. These are all phenomena that are paranormal, but the commonality I feel among them all is that they happen in an altered state of consciousness. They don't happen in a normal level, and I think that's what you are referring to.
Well, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with
that
at all. I think there are... UFO phenomena can certainly occur in a normal state of consciousness. I know many people who were very awake and aware and saw UFOs. Likewise, one can have a synchronistic experience. One can see an apparition in a very normal state of consciousness. One can see a Bigfoot.
Don't you think that shifts consciousness? I mean, actually seeing the phenomena shifts the consciousness.
Well, so does reading a book. So does watching TV. So does driving in a car. All those shift consciousness. So,
in a bigger way, because it's out of the ordinary.
No, I disagree.
Okay, it's okay.
Although I do believe altered states of consciousness do facilitate these phenomena, at least some of them, but they're certainly not required. For many years, the whole notion of altered states of consciousness was a big thing in parapsychology and New Age movement, and I think it was far overblown. I think it's important, but it certainly does not provide a very good explanatory framework for much of the phenomenon. Although with the drug culture and the like, there's a lot of attention to that.
Is the liminal state itself an altered state of consciousness?
No, not necessarily. Not
okay.
It can involve that, but it certainly doesn't have. It does not require that.
Oh, okay. So that's one thing I would like to understand. If it's not an altered state of consciousness, then just the external phenomena alone classifies a liminal experience. Is that what you're saying?
No.
Okay.
No.
It's not.
Okay. We're jumping around, and you're asking the kind of questions that really don't make any sense.
Well, I'm trying to understand what you mean by liminal states. If it doesn't involve a shift of awareness, then...
Okay. We are getting no place here. And
right,
the kinds of questions that are asked are not in any sense a logically flow to help the audience understand what we are saying.
Okay.
I will take a different tack here. Let's talk about structural anthropology. This is a much easier way to convey the ideas. Structural anthropology poses basic ideas in structural anthropology is that human consciousness tends to divide things into binary pairs, makes distinctions. And some of the major distinctions that earlier cultures make, and our culture does too, are the distinction between life and death. We make a distinction between God and human. We make a distinction between human and beast. We make a distinction between male and female. And by and large, we think those are really different things. Life is very different than death. Male and female are pretty well recognized which a person is. However, there is a middle ground. Between life and death, well, we have near-death experiences. It challenges that clear-cut distinction. We have ghostly phenomena. Certain people see apparitions of the dead. Now, does that mean the dead are in some sense alive? It tends to blur that distinction. Mediums communicate with the dead. They convey messages from the dead. Again, it blurs that distinction that most people make between life and death. Between heaven and earth. Well, we have UFOs. We have angels. Those phenomena are also ambiguous. They are considered marginal. They are considered different. Like the mediums, like the ghosts and the apparitions, they're kind of weird. People have a certain fear of them, but a fascination with them. Between male and female, well, they're intersex, and in many other cultures, that people in American Indian cultures, there were the Burdash. Those were people who took the role of the opposite sex and lived as a member of the opposite sex. Those people were seen as having a certain supernatural power, and many of them became shamans. Between humans and beasts, again, we think very separate categories, but there are accounts of vampires and werewolves. Zombies and all these things kind of blur that distinction between human and beast. All of those phenomena are paranormal or persons associated with a paranormal phenomena. Between human and and God, well, there's a middle ground. Mystics strive to become one with the divine, yet they're human. Among mystics, we have some of the most powerful paranormal phenomena ever reported. So we've got this betwixt and between category, between life and death, between male and female, between heaven and earth. We have an area that is looked upon as holy, there are taboos around it, and is looked as somewhat scary and forbidding. So that's where we find paranormal phenomena. And it's within that area that we find that these phenomena and these people are marginal. So that's a, and that area is a liminal realm between adult, child, and adult. That's a transition period. One is not clearly a child or one is not clearly an adult. Now, in our culture, that's become much more ambiguous, and where does one stop being a child and where does one become an adult? That's still open for debate. But in earlier societies, it was recognized that there was a ritual to move a person from one state to another, and in that state, and there were rituals, and during that period, paranormal phenomena, supernatural powers were seen to be more likely to manifest. And those characteristics of that in-between state that are liminal characteristics, the ambiguity, the in-betweenness, and those particular characteristics are marginal and they do not do well in large hierarchical organizations. They're typically rejected. They're tolerated for a short period, and then they are either asked to leave or they're clamped down on.
So being aware of this, how does that help us? How can we work with that?
Well, for one thing, maybe it's a good idea for most people to stay away from it for a while and for most of their time. When they do encounter it, they should understand, well, this is going on. It will likely pass. If they get more routine in their lives, when things settle down, these phenomena are likely to go away, because many psychics I know do not want to be psychic. They would prefer it to go away. And when ordinary people encounter it, okay, maybe it's sort of a sign that something has gone off a little bit, or maybe it's just this transition period. Don't get too alarmed if it keeps up. Well, just be aware that some people know how to handle it, and maybe you can find someone to guide you through it. But it's not something that I think most people should pursue, because I think it is often disruptive to personal lives. And among many psychics I know and people who pursue these phenomena, there tend to be side effects. And one of the side effects is disruption in personal relationships. And if one is willing to put up with that, that's fine. But one should be aware that that there are costs. There are reasons that Catholic priests, monks, and nuns are not allowed to marry. And it has to do with the nature of this supernatural. There are reasons that those people are kept a little bit apart, and they do not have the normal jobs that most people do. Now, I'm not saying you should not pursue development of psychic abilities, but one should be aware that there very well may be a cost. For some people, it's a calling and they cannot refuse. They have to do it. And I wish them the best, and I know people like that. But for many people where it's an option, maybe they should think twice.
But it seems like once the door is opened, and maybe that's the people you're talking about have to do, once people have a near-death experience or have seen a UFO or had some kind of paranormal experience, it's hard to go back to those polarities.
Like you betcha. You betcha it is. And it's very fun to play around in it. But they need to be aware that that might not work long-term in the rational material world. They have to be aware that there could be a cost and that they should try to get grounded, and they should walk away from it and take a break from it once in a while, because people can get very fanatical with it.
This is why you talked about funding for paranormal and UFOs. This is why it never catches on, because there's really no place for it within the normal culture.
That's right. If there is a place, it should be off on the side. If you look at, say, the government psychic spying program, well, it was housed in two really run-down little buildings. And it was out on the edge. It was not really part of the mainstream functioning of the military. And that's probably as it should have been. And it didn't last very long. It lasted, the program started in the early 70s and was closed down pretty much completely by 1995 or thereabouts. And no, it did not last. And this is what one should expect. If one is going to do research in these fields, one should not expect mainstream acceptance. One should not expect to establish a department of parapsychology in a university or a department of UFO research. It's almost certainly not going to happen anytime soon, and I don't expect it for a very, very long time, and probably never.
I mean, I appreciate your insights. I just want to know if things to always stay in the kind of same polarity. Do you see a movement in our culture?
Okay, I didn't quite catch the last part of that.
I think, do you see any kind of movement or progress or social change, or is it always hindsight? I mean, do you see, okay, we're in a normal period, but what kind of movement do you see happening within the society at large?
Well, I really don't pay attention to that. However, there is one book I do recommend that I think has a lot of insight, and that is The End of Power the author is Moises Naim, and he has suggested that it is becoming more difficult to hold on to power, whether it's political or corporate. And the book came out this year, and so if you are suggesting that there is some significant change in our culture, I would recommend that book, because I think he is suggesting that we might be in some kind of transition period this way. So I am not, Alan, I'm not disputing that we may be in a transition, and you may be feeling it and sensing it much more effectively than I am. But this is a book that intellectually appeals to me, and it's a very good read, and it does suggest that, yes, we are undergoing some kind of transition. And because power is important, and it's required for the stability and structure of society. And if power is becoming more and more difficult to hold on to, we may be in for some significant changes.
Have you looked at spiral dynamics or Ken Wilber's progression from the magical cultures to the mythic?
I am not a fan of Ken Wilber. I've tried to read him a number of times, so no, I have not followed him. And I have tried reading a number of his books. So he is not someone I pay attention to.
Okay, well, I don't know if he says this or other people, but he says, you know, society has changed. The primitive cultures live in a magical world, even though they may not be liminal. They have these rites of passage. Their world itself was magical. Nature talked to them. And then, of course, it's been a transition. And now we may be heading back to a time where things are more magical in that sense.
Well, they may be. And I think that would be probably a very bad thing. I think we need rationality. I think we need order and a certain amount of structure. Now, individual persons might engage in some of these practices, but I think there is a cost. And the thrust of history is against use of these abilities in mainstream culture and society and organizations. It is found on the margins, and perhaps more people will become marginalized, and perhaps that's good, but for the overall good of society, I don't think that these phenomena and abilities should be particularly popularized.
Okay, so you are, okay, I get where you're coming from, I think. I mean, what are you working on now? Are you taking this research further in any direction?
Well, I'm looking historically at the long-term, and I'm talking over at least 2,000 years plus, antagonism to the paranormal. And where do we find antagonism and opposition and denial, and where do we find openness? And I'm seeing a pattern that suggests that in high culture, that's elite culture, for at least 2,000 years, there has been a consistent pattern of denigration and attacking and hostility to these kinds of phenomena and claims. in more marginal cultures, in the among the artists, the bohemians, the rabble-rousers, the immigrants, the low, the impoverished, you will find a greater openness and interest.
Right. So that's, you might look at the book The Lore of the Edge. You know that book?
Oh, yes. I know Brenda Densler and have been in touch with her and had her. She's come to a conference I helped organize. Yes, that's quite a good book. It's not very theoretical, but even the idea, the lure of the edge, UFOs, flying saucers are sort of at the edge of reality, to use an expression. And there is a lure. There is a fascination there. And Brenda is a very bright lady, and it's one of the few books I strongly recommend for anyone who is interested in the UFO topic.
Yeah, I really like that book, too. She makes a lot of good points about why it is at the edge. So you see it, I think I may even ask this, it's never going to become me. UFOs are, it's just not going to happen the way everyone hopes it is.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not going to happen like most people in ufology think it will or hope it will. No. I think we need to be realistic. We have certainly about over 60 years of experience with the UFO phenomenon now, and I think we can draw some conclusions. And especially if we look at the parallels with other types of paranormal phenomena, they are marginal. They are outside the mainstream, and they always have been.
What if it did? What if somehow that shifted? I mean, just curious. I'm just throwing that out there.
Okay, if it shifted, I think our culture would be very, very different. I think we would be run not by a large central government, but by tribal warlords or even smaller cultures. So I think we would have a lot of smaller warring cultures.
I think that's what UFOs appeared on the scene and became a reality.
Well, it depends. No, I think UFOs are not physical. They are transitory by their nature. They will not appear and be here for extended periods of time. And they will be interpreted by various groups in various different fashions. That's their nature. That's what we know so far. And we've got a whole lot of strong evidence to support that idea. So if they do appear frequently, it will be like visionaries. We will have a lot of different groups having a lot of different encounters with a lot of different messages, and those groups will cluster together, and they will be antagonistic to each other. So I think we will have more wars, we will have greater poverty, and we have a lower standard of living, and I think that's what would happen.
Okay, so without the UFOs, we have a possibility for peace and a better standard of living.
A more consistent, orderly, routinized way of living. The UFO and other paranormal phenomena, supernatural phenomena, will continue to occur. It will tend to induce change, and in conditions of change will also induce paranormal phenomena. And I think that's always has been, and I don't expect major shift one way or the other.
Well, we will see. I mean, who knows? Yes, people are hoping it will shift, and maybe it's not. But I don't know. I mean, we're in a position of not knowing, but we seem to be on the verge of some kind of momentous shift. Or is that just
that's always been the hope of people, shift to a much better world. I don't think the world operates that way, except in times of severe calamity. So I am not hoping for a momentous shift. The momentous shift might very well involve nuclear war. And I don't think that's really a good thing.
Well, it is momentous shift in if you consider like the European Union. At least there's been a shift. They combined their money. These are countries that were, you know, warring 100 years ago against each other, France and Germany and England. They're part of a common currency now. That's a huge shift.
Yes, but there's a lot of antagonism and opposition to the common currency. And if you have too much central control, there will be, and which will impose a certain amount of rigidity on the system, there will be some kind of counterforce. So it is always a tension between those in power and those outside, and it continues. And anytime one side becomes too dominant, there is likely to be some kind of opposing movement, and that may be disruptive and destructive for a while.
Well, I do appreciate your perspective and your clear level approach. I don't agree with all of it, and we'll see what happens in the next 20 or 30 years with some of this phenomena coming forward or not.
Well, all I can say is we have had at least 60 years of the UFO phenomena and thousands of years of other paranormal phenomena, and I think we can draw some conclusions about where it fits in society.
Yeah. No, I agree, unless society changes it the way it is now, it always will remain and on the edge. But
yes.
And society has gone through huge shifts from agricultural to industrial to digital. And
right.
I think we are in that shift to a digital reality, and computers are changing everybody's perception of communication and decentralization and just connection. And that's a major shift, and I don't think we'll realize that for, we'll look back and say, yes, that was the time, but...
I think you may be right on that.
We'll see. And, I think more and more people seem to be open to paranormal or Eastern religions or yoga or quantum physics.
I'm not seeing that compared to, say, the 1970s. I think there was far more interest and openness back in the 70s than there is today.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I'm seeing it, but it might just be the world I'm living in. I think people like Deepak Chopra are much more popular.
If you look at, say, the word parapsychology or paranormal, and if you go to Google's N-gram, which plots the relative frequency in usage of those terms, you will see parapsychology had much more interest and there was much more frequent mention of it in the 70s than there is today. So there is relatively little scientific interest. There is certainly some popular interest in these topics, but it's more at the level of fiction and play rather than serious attention.
But I do have to say parapsychology is a little outdated term, and it may be ideas like remote viewing are much more popular. Of course, that didn't exist in the 70s, but they do seem to be increasing.
I don't know if they're increasing, but I do know that there is less funding and fewer financial resources and monies devoted to them. That is way down. There is much less research. So serious interest is way down, and there is no question about that. For hobbyists, people want to play, not seriously, but just want to play around and have fun. There is still, and in, say, ghost busting, there are a lot of people who are doing ghost research. 99% is totally unscientific, and the people who are undertaking it have no idea of how to implement any scientific protocols.
Right.
So that doesn't really disturb anyone. That does not really disturb the powers that be, because everyone can laugh at it. If it gets serious and serious research is done, that's a different story, and serious research is way, way, way down.
Right. Okay, I just wanted to ask you one question about dreams. Dreams seem to be a place in between, a liminal state. Where does that fit in? Are those just psychological manifestations, or are there doorways into other realms
I don't really have a position on that. That's much more a psychological issue, and I'm really not someone who spends a lot of time commenting on psychological aspects.
Okay.
I don't. their dreams, however, do seem to facilitate certain psychic experiences. The precognitive dream is one of the most commonly reported psychic experiences.
Right. Well, I do appreciate your research, and I think it's important that people, you know, not jump overboard with, you know, if they've seen a UFO, like they think the world's going to change. It probably won't, but I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I hang around with a lot of those researchers, like Richard Dolan. And I was just in Washington for 5 days, citizen hearing on disclosures. Stephen Bassett is pushing the government to reveal its secrets. I don't know if they have crash discs or not. It seems like they could, but they're not telling anyone. But according to your research, it doesn't seem like they are interested in. So there's this polarity of opinion.
Yes, these phenomena inherently produce polarities and oppositions and antagonisms. And the debates have been going on for well over 2,000 years about the existence and meaning of these phenomena. That tells us something about the very nature of these phenomena.
Right. I do think more people are open to mystical experiences. Maybe we're not calling it parapsychology, but we're calling it psychic awareness. We're calling it
I totally disagree. I think the interest is far less than in the 1970s. I think it has declined over the last 40 years.
I don't know. I think the near-death experience is hugely up. The top bestseller right now in the New York Times list is called Proof of Heaven.
No question. There's always some interest in this. But if you look at the number of groups, you look at the number of conferences, and if you look at how the major media treat this, you don't find openness within the major media. You do find it. Now, there are exceptions, no question. But I don't think Eben Alexander's book is going to make near the impact that Raymond Moody and Kubler-Ross had.
Mm-hmm. Well, there have been a lot of UFO. I was at a conference of 700 people in the desert this summer, all interested in UFOs and hearing the latest. The increase, if you go to the UFO reporting center, it seems like the frequency of UFO reports are up.
Well, I think compared to, say, 5 to 7 years ago, yes, there is an increase of interest. I would agree with that. But compared
to sightings.
And sightings, but compared to, say, the late 80s and early 90s, it is way down.
Okay.
I know at our local UFO group, well, we used to have, you know, 70 people coming from 50 to 100 miles away, standing room only. We haven't seen that in 2 decades. The UFO conferences were much better attended 20 years ago than they are today.
Well, I don't know. I just see, you know, I'm part of that world, so I'm just in contact with that. I know I helped produce a film called The Hidden Hand. Have you seen that film?
Yes, I have. In fact, Ingo Swann got me an early copy of it.
Right, and lots of people are opening. That's in the top 10 best-selling videos on Google right now. But yes, I mean, it may just be part of a surge, and it may just, you know, not go anywhere. So we'll see. We'll have a conversation and at some point again, and we'll see if anything shifted.
Sounds good.
Well, thank you, George. Your website is also called thetricksterbook.com.
Just tricksterbook.com.
I'm talking to George Hansen, the Trickster and the Paranormal. Are you speaking anywhere coming up?
I don't have any scheduled speaking engagements yet. I expect to have a few next year, but probably no more this year.
And do you speak at UFO conferences or mostly paranormal conferences?
Well, I will speak wherever they will have me. I have spoken at UFO conferences a number of times.
Okay.
And at our local UFO meeting in Hamilton, New Jersey, I frequently speak. But that's
okay.
Open to everyone.
Are you a member of MUFON?
No, I am not. I was in years past. MUFON is basically a group for hobbyists, not for serious researchers. It has a lot of infighting. It's a very interesting organization to watch. I think it's made some useful contributions, but I choose not to support it.
What would you say is the most serious UFO research group out there?
Wow. I can't name one. There are a few investigators whom I would endorse, but at this point, I don't have much confidence in any of the U.S. organizations at this point.
Can you tell me which investigators you respect?
I think it'd be, I don't follow it nearly as closely as I used to, but certainly people like Larry Bryant, is very involved in the government cover-up issues, I have a great respect for. Jan Aldrich, and in years past, Barry Greenwood was quite active. Robert Todd was very good. Unfortunately, he's deceased. Right now, a lot of the stuff on the Internet are people who like to get their names in front of people rather than doing research. So,
Do you know Grant Cameron's work?
I like Grant Cameron. I have a great deal of respect for the work Grant Cameron has done.
Yeah, I like Grant, too, and I do like Richard Dolenz, and I do like Linda Moulton Howe.
I respect both Dolan and Linda Howe. I believe they are on the wrong track. I think both of them are very bright people. They've done a huge amount of work, but I think they've chosen the wrong paradigm and the wrong way to conceptualize these phenomena. And I think they've made a contribution, but I think they could have done much better taking a different tack, the tack of, say, Jacques Vallée, John Keel, or working along the lines I have, which I consider myself much more in line with the ideas of Keel and Vallée than I am with Dolan and Linda Howe.
Well, you must be in line with Jung's book on flying saucers, too.
Yeah, I like Jung, but Jung had a fairly limited exposure to it. He has got some interesting ideas. But I'm primarily not a Jungian. I take a much more anthropological rather than a psychological approach. But yes, Jung certainly was an influence in my thinking.
I'm just curious, what's your spiritual approach to life? Are you religious? Are you spiritually based? I mean, do you have any opinion about spirituality?
I really don't. In fact, I don't really know what spirituality means. I know what religion means. I'm not sure what spiritual means.
Spiritual means that there's a part of you that exists beyond the material world.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, okay. If that's what spiritual means, then yes, I think there is something other than simply the materialistic world.
Right. Okay.
But I'm not sure we can know very much about it. We can see what the consequences are in the material world. We have to derive ideas about this other realm from what we can see and what its effects are on this world.
So you don't meditate. You haven't gone inward to look at maybe the reflection of consciousness inside yourself.
I have in the past. I did meditate for many years ago. And it's useful, but I wouldn't say I found answers there that were useful to me. I think it's a good technique. I think it's practical to do that. But no, I am very much more extrovert. My focus is on the outside world rather than the inside world.
Well, that's valid. I mean, I think it's great. I think it's great to bring anthropological, structural analysis to this phenomenon so we can understand it from a different point of view. I think all sides are valid, so thank you, George.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, I hope we weren't jumping around too much. I followed the conversation.
Well, let's see. You know, sometimes what I think doesn't work, the listeners think is great, so we'll just have to find out.
Yeah. I just like to cover all the bases, and I think the consistency is that, you know, we're we're trying to talk around something that can't be explained.
Well, it can't be put fully into words. You're absolutely right on that. So we have to look at what the effects are, what happens in the environment around these phenomena. And one of the things is this ambiguity and these warring factions and this dissension and argumentation over these debates have been going on literally thousands of years.
Right. And I think language is evolving. I think we're, I mean, my point of view, I'll end on that, and if you want another word, and that's fine. But we are moving into a time where the ambiguity is being more and more clarified. People are having experiences, it seems, at least people I know, that are defining these realms in a language of exchange, of a culture that seems to be emerging, that has more awareness of these states. I mean, that's what I'm seeing.
I think there are certain groups that are, but I think overall, culture at large, I tend to doubt that.
The only reason I'm saying this, and I'm sure you'll totally disagree, is that it seems that some vibration is increasing that is opening up people to be more sensitive. And I can't explain that in any rational way.
Okay, do you have any numbers, or can you point to groups of people that are doing this that are increasing, that someone could see, oh yes, this group is really, you know, getting more prominence or gaining more members? I'm not seeing it, but I'm not sure you're wrong.
No, I would say the channeling phenomena seems to be increasing. People like Abraham Hicks, Beshar, a guy named Paul Selig, they are getting more and more people listening to this liminal phenomena called channeling. And
compare to the mid to late 1980s when channeling really started taking off?
Yeah, channeling, that was a door open, but now it's reached a plateau where, you know, the New York Times, William Sapphire, was talking about channeling in one of his columns as a word in the language. So the 80s opened that, and that's where I got into the whole thing. But now it's like, oh, yeah, I went to see my channel this week. So I think it's become more acceptable and more widespread and more popular.
Well, I don't, you know, Shirley MacLaine got a lot of attention. I don't see anyone I don't see much mention of it in the major media these days.
Well, Linda Evans was into it. Yeah, I mean, there are people. I think it's seeping in behind. The major media is also the last to know.
In this day and age, I agree with you. But I'd like to see somewhere one can point to, whether it's like a Google Ngram or some other plot of growth in interest in these areas. One area that has increased dramatically is the number of ghost hunting groups. I think that's due to the ghost hunter programs on TV, but there is a big popular interest in that topic. And I don't see nearly the growth in the UFO field, but in the ghost hunter field, there is an enormous amount of popular interest.
Well, I do see a lot of people leading organized religion and hooking up with spiritually based groups that are not religiously based out of the old organized schools. Do you see that? Can we agree about that?
Give me some examples.
If you look on Meetup, if you look under spirituality, there's a whole thing on the internet that's spiritual but not religious.
Yes, that has had enormous growth, no question.
Right, and that's huge on the internet. And
yes, it is.
The internet is a power that's, in a sense, dismantling religion and bringing out this global spiritual movement, which includes everything we've been talking about as a basic fact, clairvoyance, communication with the dead. All that seems to be a part of a spiritually based culture that seems to be emerging.
Okay, that's a very interesting point, and I agree with you in part. but I am not sure that we're seeing a growth of interest in overt psychic or paranormal phenomena. We're clearly seeing the spiritual but not religious. That's been a real growth industry. I'm not sure how long that can be sustained, because...
But, you know, paranormal and psychic are terms that, in a sense, were very 70s or 60s and 70s. They've kind of gone out of style. So if you're looking at those terms, they're not being used in the same way, even though...
Well, I agree with you, but there's still these phenomena, and in these spiritual but not religious, there is very little emphasis on overtly using these phenomena.
If you talk about remote viewing, there's people doing that in so many subgroups.
That's
a different way of terming it.
Okay, you may be right on this. And it may be like the ghost hunting groups. Again, it is much more a fun thing to do. It's not taken totally seriously, because if it's serious, people start to build organizations and commercialize or use it in a religious sense, where you can go and find this and observe this and use it like the mediums of the 19th century. And, you know, the mediums of the 19th century were highly prominent, and people knew where they could go. And they were well known. And I don't see that happening in our culture today.
It's happening with channeling. If you want to see a great channel,
I don't think most people could name a channeler. They could name mediums, 150 years ago.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I think channeling is, at least maybe among the people I know, and I'm not in the mainstream, I'm sort of edge myself.
Yeah. And I was in that edge, too, and I'm not so much anymore, and so I try to stand above it and look, where are these marginal people, how well are they doing, and compare them to more the mainstream. And so you need to have a holistic perspective. We've got people like us who are marginal, and then we have to compare ourselves with the mainstream. And that's kind of hard to do.
I mean, it's interesting you talked about holistic, and that's a movement that is widely popular, the holistic, the whole food movement, the organic food movement. That is peripheral.
Yes, but the people on the margins, the people into channeling, need to be more holistic. What I mean by that is they need to recognize their position in comparison to the larger culture.
Right, and I think it's seeping in ways that maybe... You know, you only can observe what you're aware of, and if you're not aware of this, then it's not going to be observable to you. So,
but one can read newspapers. One can look at conference reports. One can monitor attendance at various meetings and growth of various groups. And Meetup certainly has allowed a lot of possibilities that were not available to people before. So it may spark a surge of interest. In fact, I'm seeing that in our local group, that Meetup has brought in a bunch more people. So this could change, but I'm still not seeing the enthusiasm, excitement, number of people, and number of publications that I saw in the 70s.
Well, publications you can't look at anymore, because it's a whole new landscape. People aren't looking at publications.
If you're going to get really serious, you're going to have print material.
Right, but you should also look at the website and now look and see what...
It's harder and harder to tell what's the good material.
It is harder to tell, but even if it's bad material, people are looking at bad material, perhaps, or mediocre, but they're looking...
Yes, but they're also reading more comic books, and comic books have superheroes, and superheroes have paranormal powers. And so you see a surge of interest in fictional portrayal. I don't think that means people are going to get serious. I think it means the opposite.
Did you read that book about mutants that Jeff Perpall wrote?
Yes, I've got a copy sitting right in front of me.
Are you reading it?
I have read a fair amount of it.
It's dense, but he makes some good points as a movement towards this emerging culture that that did kind of come from comics, that did sort of come out, where did those ideas come from, but a kind of undercurrent that was working with these paranormal possibilities.
It was, but only in an artistic fashion, not in a real serious fashion to a large extent. And people get to play with the idea.
I'm saying it planted, I think he's saying it planted seeds of possibility that may not be serious to the comic book reader, but planted ideas of human potential.
Well, you could say the same thing about Shakespeare, with the witches and ghosts and the like, and that people could become a witch. So the paranormal fiction has been around for a very, very long time.
I mean, yes, I agree. I mean, I just wanted to just point out to you that the words are, that the language is changing. Most people don't use the word paranormal.
I agree. So. You are correct. But if we're
talking
about...
The word psi, you mentioned psi to someone who may even be into this, you know, PSI, they have no idea what you're talking about.
Alan, you're absolutely right. But we have to refer to the phenomena, because what I'm interested in is the phenomena or stories of these kinds of abilities and powers and manifestations. If we're just talking spirituality for most people can mean almost anything. Be a better person, be aware of our interconnectedness.
I do want to just say also people's interest in synchronicity seems to be on the rise. I mean, from what I've seen,
It's been pretty prominent for at least 10 to 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're probably right on that.
And the idea, also the idea of premonitions, you may not call it something, people have called it premonitions, especially in the wake of 2001 and all the people who say they had premonitions, but the idea of premonitions also is on the rise.
I'm not so sure of that. I think it was very big in the 70s, and I don't think it comes anywhere close.
I think it's interesting just the way to look at language in the liminal world, at least, you know?
Yeah.
And how that's changing and shifting. But
you're absolutely right. It is shifting.
Well, and it's exciting, the shift, because what I noticed in the shift is that...
I think the shift suggests the ambiguity, the uncertainty. It's not stable. And if you use certain words, people look down on you. They're more marginalized. As these words and the phenomena are well-known and recognized, they are more strongly opposed, and there's greater marginality. So I think the shifting and changing of words, and parapsychology itself has had lots of changes of nomenclature because the words were looked down on and were sort of taboo. So I think the change of names of the phenomena suggest something unstable or unsavory about them.
I will acknowledge that in the 80s, with the awakening of the New Age, there were a lot of bookstores and crystal shops.
Yes.
And those have closed. The Bodhi Tree in LA has closed. And,
is the Bodhi Tree closed? Well, Weiser certainly did. I didn't know the Bodhi Tree had.
Yes, the Bodhi Tree just in the last few years have closed down.
I used to go there, and I used to go to Weiser's. I knew quite a few shops.
A lot of those shops have closed, but I think it's also the fact that in the beginning there was a huge explosion of these new influx into the culture, and now it's sort of integrated and not so sensational anymore.
I think it's not just sensational. I think there's probably less practice. Certainly
maybe,
less scientific.
It's also more like the younger generation totally accepts some aspects, I think, of paranormal. It's no longer.
Well, I don't know. I think the rise of the new atheism suggests an extreme antagonism toward it as well.
Do you think there's a new atheism on the rise?
Oh, there's no question there's a new atheism.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that because, of course, I don't.
It's a big phenomenon. All you have to do is look at the groupies around James Randi. the magicians.
Oh, well.
He has a lot. He has thousands of groupies.
Wow.
Oh yeah, he has a lot of followers, and the whole Dennett, Dawkins, Harris, and Hitchens crowd has stimulated a lot of interest in atheism among the younger people in this country, especially the more educated.
Well. But that's not my crowd, because I mean the books like Dying to Be Me, another near-death classic by Anita Munjani, has been on the bestseller list. People just love that. I mean, all my YouTube videos talk to a crowd that seems to be the opposite of the New Atheist, and has found an inner spirituality. So,
but no, the New Atheism has grown significantly.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that at all, and. I was hoping that maybe people were shifting away because, you know, out of atheism came existentialism, and that didn't really serve anybody.
I agree. I agree.
So I think it is, I think the talking about what you're talking about, this liminality, this in-between world, at least gets people thinking who are maybe into the new atheism.
I'm not sure I could reach them.
Okay.
The new atheists are a very interesting group, but they're rather dogmatic, and they are rather unthinking in a way similar to many of the New Agers, I believe.
I also want to say Hay House. Louise Hay just did a conference with 3,000 people here in New York, believing in the ability of spirit or positive thinking or human potential. And
wow.
She's a huge force, the Hay House Publishing, the
That's
I Can Do It, all over the country. She gets thousands and thousands of people together at these expos. They're worth looking into.
Interesting.
Yes, two or three days, mostly I would say 80% of it are women in their 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Uh-huh.
And maybe it's interesting that the numbers there, because you're getting a lot more women than men.
Hey, we're not on the podcast anymore, are we?
I think we are.
Oh.
Yes, we are. It's okay. Why? Did you want to say something off the air?
As long as I know.
It's okay. We are still on. No, I mean, I haven't heard from the producer. But I can say goodbye and call you back and...
Okay.
Finish your comments.
Yeah, anyway, I think this is getting tedious for the listeners.
Right. Well, I think that was the most interesting part, is comparing notes, you know.
Oh.
seeing where things are from these different perspectives. But anyway, thanks, George. I will call you back. And,
okay.
This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. I've been talking to George Hansen. Hansen,
yes.
The author of The Trickster and the Paranormal. I think he makes a lot of good points about why most of the things you've heard over the course of these last few years on this program have been made on the edge, because there's no place right now in our culture or ever, Pete George's opinion, I think, is. But I disagree. I think there is a time coming where these ideas maybe will be stabilized. The central government, in a sense, that we have to restructure and accept these possibilities. So we'll see. We'll see what the future holds. Okay, thank you for listening. So if you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com.